something, in a nutshell, is Tshuva to fix something out there, or is it some kind of a pagam that I made, or is Tshuva to fix something in here? That's the shaila. So, you hear this question?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So it's very interesting. Let me give you an example of this. A very interesting chazal. Chazal say, so the Gemara doesn't make a lot of sense. The Gemara says, "Hirhure avera kashin me avera." Anybody know what that means? Hirhure avera. Let's analyze this. What does it mean?
The desire, the intent, the thoughts, and
now the same. Which one? It just said three things, yeah.
I guess it's the thoughts of it, the intention.
Right. Hirhure avera, so it might mean like fantasizing about a sin, right? Or the thought that goes into planning a sin. Right. Might mean anything. Is?
If it's...
Kushin avera, it's worse than an avera. Isn't that unbelievable or what? Jimmy Carter or something like that? Who's the guy who lusts in his heart?
Jimmy Carter,
right? So, you know, it became like a big American Shiloh, like, is that okay or what? So lust in your heart, you know. No, Jimmy Carter, I lust in my heart, you know. So, like, great American president. So, here, I don't know, there's a Gemara, we've got to analyze this for a second. Here, hure avera, kushim avera, that the thought of doing an avera is worse than the avera. Now, you know this is not true. You know, it's not true. You know, it's worse to do an aver than to have your aver. But the Gemara says your aver kasha me aver. So, what does it mean? What does it mean? You have a possibility.
Kasha, it doesn't mean worse; it means more difficult. I mean, in the sense, harder.
Harder to.
Harder to turn around. I mean, to do it there without planning it, sort of like in a case of murder. You know, premeditated murder is a much worse crime than the crime of passion in American law. I mean,
Let's say never gets to the murder though. Just your hure avera. Anything wrong with that? Yeah. That's certainly not worse in American law.
Like, there's any, like you said, like there's a whole like line of chew and vidu, and that's like the expression. That's like the actualization of it. Then it shouldn't be as bad because there's no actualization of it.
Yeah. Let me tell you a gewaldige thing here. You want to hear gewaldige things? What I'm going to tell you is, you come here to hear gewaldige things. Let me tell you a marsha. I like your mark. Marsha says as follows. There's two scenarios. I might even mention this once a long time ago. Let's put two scenarios on the table. Scenario A. Somebody wakes up in the morning and decides, I'm going to become a Baal Tshuva. You know, after weeks and weeks of contemplation, they decide they're going to keep kosher. So they go to the, they get up in the morning, they ask somebody, where's the kosher butcher? Today they're going to have a kosher meal for supper, they're going to feed their kids kosher and all that. And they get on the bus and they go to kosher neighborhood, you know, wherever you're from, right? Golders Green. they go to the kosher neighborhood and they go into the kosher butcher and they buy some kosher meat. And they feel really good about themselves that they paid twice the amount that that they paid yesterday, like a real Baal Tshuva, and got the best glatt kosher meat, and came home and they cook it, and they eat it, and they make a bracha, and they become Baal Tshuva, and little did they know that this kosher butcher is a good-for-nothing crook. And what happened was that yesterday, he ran out of meat, and he didn't want to lose any money, so he ran quickly to the trefa butcher who he got this deal with and through the back alley brought in a bunch of trefa meat and sold it as kosher meat. And here's this lady who decides for the first day in her life to keep kosher, and she's going home and she's saying, you know, I don't know, this stuff tastes exactly the same as all the other stuff that I've been eating. You know, nothing wrong with kosher food, because she's eating the same tray from the butcher that she's been buying from all the time. And okay, painful scenario, right? The painful scenario, yeah. So that's scenario one. Lady thinks she's eating kosher and she's eating tray. By the way, unfortunately, this happens all the time. Happens all the time, you know, where somebody, we're dealing with a lot of, money out, you know, when it comes to kashrus, you know, I always say Kashrus is a trace business, you know. it's a lot of crooks out there. You're dealing with money, you know. Kashrus is where business and religion meet. You don't want to be on that crossroads where, you know, business is good and religion is good. Not good when they, it doesn't work out so good when they come together. It's like two different, you know. But you make business out of religion, you're going to have a bunch of crooks. Not everybody. There's a lot of very fine, ethical people, but you got to know who you're. More important than knowing what the chumras of every butcher does, you got to know, like, who the guy is. That's the real question. Like, who are you buying from over here? That's the, okay, scenario one. Scenario two is somebody wakes up in the morning and says, I've had it with Judaism. I've had it with religion. I'm sick of paying twice the amount for my meat. I don't believe this thing anyway. The whole thing is just ridiculous. And I'm going to go out and get some treif meat today. So they get on the bus and they find out where's the treif section of the thing. And everyone looks at her like she's crazy. You know, just, she walks into the first store that she gets off the bus and gets off the walks into the first meat store that she sees, and the guy's talking Italian and all that. And she goes and she buys a big piece of treif meat and she pays half the price. And she feels like she did a real rebellion here. Little does she know that the treif butcher, ran out of meat. So he ran quickly over to his friend Moshe, the Jewish butcher, and didn't want to lose the customer, so bought some kosher meat. And this lady here, who thinks she's eating treif, is really eating kosher. You know, my father-in-law, Olav Shalom, was the biggest, when I say the biggest, he was biggest in a couple of ways. First of all, he was 6'6", and he weighed 400 pounds. He was the shofet of, he had a big, gigantic shofet house in Omaha, Nebraska, where the whole western United States lived from his shechita. But he was so he was very big business, but he was also very big, so when he used to walk into the the pen, all the bulls used to run away. He's pretty scared of him.
Wow.
You're walking there with that knife, you know. One time, he was very, very wealthy, and then exactly when I got engaged, he became very, very poor. My mazel here. But lost it all. But one time, he was, you bid on things in America. They don't care if you're kosher or treif or whatever. So one time, he supplied every McDonald's in the United States with chopped meat, you know. Whoa. So, like, it's a very interesting thing. Like, you know, wow. Everybody went to McDonald's and they were eating kosher burgers. So whether they wanted to or not, they were eating kosher burgers. because he was able to compete on the price.
Answer.
What?
The answer?
The problem with the cheese, you know. The issue with the cheese and the bread and the all the other stuff. But I'm just saying, it was just an interesting thing, you know.
It's
more what?
It's more of a lot. It's more than Hasid.
With Basar B'Cholot.
Yeah,
Basar B'Cholot is more of a lot. That's right. Yeah, because you can't have Anus or Chalal Isser, right? So you can't have the Isser of Basar B'Cholot on top of Trey. So you just, I don't know, more, in other words, there's no Basar B'Cholot, there's just Trey, yeah. In any case, that was just an interesting thing. America was eating kosher for about 6 weeks. McDonald's. So here's the lady who goes in and really feels like she's doing an act of rebellion against God and really feels, but she's really eating kosher. God is protecting her, and she's really eating kosher. So now, Marshall poses the following question. I mean, the illustration and animation is mine, but the Marshall's question is very simple. Who's the worst Jew? Who's the better Jew and who's the worst Jew? There's one person who wants to be eating kosher, and she's eating treif. Maisa, she's eating treif. Maisa, she's ingesting treif. And the other person is wanting to eat treif, but Levisa is eating kosher. So, you know, it's not so simple. You can't answer this too quickly because, you know, one person actually ate treif. They're eating treif. They fed their family treif, you know. It's like a horrible thing. But they want to be keeping kosher. They want to be keeping kosher. The other person wants to be keeping treif. Like, I really want to keep treif, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu messed me up, and now I'm eating kosher. So you have two different kinds of scenarios. You know what happened in Baltimore a couple of years ago? They made this fundraising cruise, and everybody went, like the whole community, very close to people in the community, went on this
fundraising cruise, you know, because they have the harbor there.
They went on this fundraising cruise, and I was under the rod of Baltimore and everything else, and people were commenting that this fake kosher shrimp tastes like the balichuva, all you want rim. Balichuva, say, this stuff tastes like real shrimp, you know. It's the name of the company is, I think, called Just Like Shrimp. So that's the name of the company. So you can go to the supermarket and buy Just Like Shrimp, kosher, parv, milk, I think. So this is junk, just like shrimp. So anyways, what happened was that the caterer got messed up, and the whole crew community was eating shrimp. It's like a really, wild, yeah. And there was, it's very interesting. One of the gadolim was on that cruise as a speaker, and just before they brought him a plate and everything else. And just an interesting story. Just before he was about to eat, like he got seasick or something, and he got like really sick to his stomach and couldn't eat anything. So it was like the only one who didn't eat anything was this fellow. Anyways, they came on shore after the whole fundraising thing and the music and the speaker and the tiger and everything. And really, everyone ate shrimp, like an unbelievable thing. You know, the biggest tzaddik in the world ate shrimp, except for this one tzaddik here who didn't eat the shrimp. So. So, you know, like Rabbi Heineman, who's the Rabbi in Baltimore, declared it to be a fast day. Everybody fasted and everybody gave tzedakah. And, like, you know, what happened? Oy, oy, maho yolonu, right? We all ate grapes. Okay, so here you go. Here's the question to Marshall's question. Who's the better person? The person who eats the trafe and wants to eat kosher, the person who eats the kosher and wants to eat trafe? Okay, give me an intelligent answer to this.
Well, it depends. I mean, do you focus on the person's intention or the actual action? If you focus on the person's intention, then you know the person who intended to eat kosher did better than the person who intended to eat grape. If you focus on the action,
so you are rephrasing the question very well. The question is, like, what's the accent over here? What's the underscore? What's the emphasis? Are we? Why would that? What's the question? What is the question according to everything we learned? The question is, like, what's the purpose of all the mitzvahs anyway? This is a very important philosophical question. What do you say?
See, like, you're going on this. I mean, cause like, the way, if you're saying on the inside, like, it goes to the inside, the way you are on the inside, then that'd be supporting the Gemara.
If you go by the inside, then so then what? Which one's better?
The Gemara, then. Because the Gemara is saying, where's the sin? What's the thing about the sin and the action?
Which is what, an inside deal or an outside deal?
Inside deal.
Oh, so if you go, so you hear this Gemara, all of a sudden this Gemara shouts out a whole new idea, which nobody understands except for the Marsha. Here, Hurei Aveira, Kashin Me Aveira, says the Marsha, that the thoughts of the Aveira are worse than the Aveira itself. In other words, every Aveira is divided into two parts. So like a real Zeftika Aveira so has both Kavana and action, right? I want to eat shrimp and I'm eating shrimp. So that's Hirhuri Aveira and the Aveira. Then sometimes he had an Aveira Bishoge. I didn't mean to eat shrimp, I thought I was eating just like shrimp, right? So I have the Aveira without the Hirhuri Aveira. And then sometimes, says the Barsha, you could have the Hirhuri Aveira. I thought I was eating shrimp, but really I'm eating kosher, like a crazy scenario, right? So says the Gemara, says Marshall, says, you want to understand what this Gemara means? It means that Hirhuri Aveira, that if you're going to divide up, if you're forced to divide up an Aveira into two parts, Hirhuri Aveira and Aveira, so you should know that Hirhuri Aveira, the thoughts that go into the Aveira are worse than the Aveira itself, and therefore who's the worst person?
The person
who's eating kosher. So you got to ask your kids someday, like, okay, tell me a case where it's better to eat treif than to eat kosher. And he's going to say, well, if you're dying and you're in the hospital bed. No. something like, really, like, no, how old is the person? Where's a case that it's better to eat treif than to eat kosher? So the answer is, I just told you the scenario. That there's such a thing as a here, hurry up here, come over here, yeah.
One question based on Shari Chuba. He says that someone who just regular wants to do a sin and doesn't do a sin, for whatever reason, they're not punished, unless it was Nasa Keter. Once they've been doing the sin a lot, then it becomes like a Keter, and then if they're forced to not do the sin, it still is a sin. Whereas someone who wants to do a mitzvah in his own ace and can't do the mitzvah.
But again, if you're doing a very repeatedly, so it's not so like a Keter.
Right. So then if you're forced to not do it, he says you still get punished as if you had done it. But this woman had never even shaved in the first place, so she never had done it in the first place, and I don't, according to him, I think she wouldn't get punished for it.
Could be.
Or in the other case also, I don't know if there'd be any...
It's not yet a balavera.
Right.
It's not yet a balavera.
Right. Once she done it, she done it twice, the third time.
This is true, but you see, what you do have here is an act of rebellion. What you have here is an act of rebellion. The real depth of this is, and the original question that I posed about tshuva itself, like, is tshuva to fix something out there, is it something to fix something in here? The obvious extension of that question is, okay, well, if you want to understand that, let's first understand, let's be philosophers here, let's first understand what's an aveira. Is an aveira messing something up out there, or is an aveira messing something up in here, right? That's it. In other words, then I can figure out, if tshuva gets rid of the aveira, so what is the purpose of tshuva? Is it to fix something in here, something out there, right? Okay? Mm-hmm. So there you have the question. So comes the Marsha and he gives the answer, right?
Yeah.
In the name of the Gemara. So what's the answer? That there's two things here, as they say in yeshivas. There's two dinim. The fact is, there's two dinim. There's two parts to this avera thing. One thing is it's doing something bad out there. Another thing is it's doing something bad in here. But if you have to make the choice as to which is worse, the hear hooray avera, that which is going on inside of me, that's leading up to the avera, is a worse problem than the avera itself. Let me just give you one more example of this because I want to be thorough in this. But I think this is a comparison. I'm thinking about it right now. I think it's a comparison. The Gemara says this fact like this. Here's the Gemara's idea. The Gemara says that how does this work out? The first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So Gemara in Gittin. First Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Why? The three biggies, right? So people were killing each other.
And Shemitah.
They were killing each other. There was a lot of acts of incest. Right? They were worshiping Avodah Zarah. Big stuff, right? I mean, big stuff. Amazing. While they were doing Karbanos, they were doing all this. Second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed.
Sinas.
So the verse says, you know, the Lame comes to teach you. Sheshava Sinas Chilam Ki Gimel Averis Chamor Shebetayr. The verse says in Gittins. From here you learn that it's just as bad to have Sinas Chinam as the three biggies. First Beis HaMikdash was destroyed for the three big things, so that's what causes the harm of Beis HaMikdash. Second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed for one sort of little thing, you know, we just hated each other all over the place. It was the Second Temple syndrome. We always talk about it. But the Second Temple syndrome was like nobody's any darn good. You know, like you're no good. Everybody's criticizing each other. So Lama Shishkula. So Vilna Gaon comes along and he says, "What do you mean Shishkula? Now, how long was the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash? 70 years. How long is the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash? Unknown." Pending, right? This is pending. So where are we holding now? 2000 something, right? So a little less. 35 years to what?
Not 935 years.
Okay. So how many years?
Well, it was destroyed in the year 70, which is, I guess, 1670 CE. Yeah.
So how many years?
About 1900.
I thought you were
doing a bad,
it's almost 1995 years. 1930. Okay. So we're shy of 2,000 years here, and we're not yet there. So Vilna Gaon says, "What do you mean, Malamish Yishkulin Zelazeh? What do you mean that it's the same thing to have seen a skin of? What's a 70-year proposition? And the Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us back a base of Mikdash, and what we don't know. We're close to 2,000 years." And we still don't have a base of Mikdash. So what's the pshat? So he brings you another Gemara that tells us that Vilna Gaon tells us that Sidas Chinam is you can't say something is worse than Avodah Zarah. You can't say something is worse than Gilui Arayis, but it has an added fault to it, an added factor to it, which makes it worse. And that is, I don't remember the exact language, I hope this is right. He says, the first base of Mikdash was destroyed, Bishum, V'iskalya Avonim, that's language, V'iskalya Avonim. And the second base of Mikdash, Lo Yiskalya Avonim. What does Iskalya Avonim mean? That in the first base of Mikdash, it was open, the Hatoyim were open. It was a cultural thing, and people just, did Avodah Zarah, that's what they did, They did Avodah Zarah. It's crazy, but they did it. They didn't care about certain halachas. You see it even today. Like somehow or another, people are pro, but there's just certain halachas that they don't keep. You ever see this? I said to people, people argue with people, just argue with somebody on the plane about this. We're just pro. Why are you called the Haredi? I'm not called the Haredi. Blah blah blah. I hate these arguments. let me read my in-flight halachas. I don't know why I always get into these things. Somebody's arguing we're not pro. So I said to this guy, I said, I'll just ask you these questions. Does your wife cover her hair? No. So I said, does your wife wear dress to the ears? No. Do you wear tzitzis all the time? Do you wear tzitzis all the time? I'm just like, well, all the time, like really, like all the time. No. Do you wear a yarmulke to work? No. So I said, well, you're not just as firm as me then. maybe you're not half their firm, but don't tell me you're just as firm as me. You're not. There's certain, those things. What? But those things. What's this pick and choose business? By the way, I got a lot of time for non-firm people. I like them. I don't have a problem with non-firm people. But don't tell me you're firm. It's amazing to me that certain halachas just like disappeared. They evaporated. What happened to them? There's whole sets of partial portions of the Shulchan Aruch that we just somehow altogether decide to totally ignore. And I used to have these people. They used to ask me these minutiae of shilas, do I have to fast on the Sarabat Tevis? Should I eat this? Should I eat that? Should I take my water in a schnapps glass and this and that? It's like, lady, cover your arms. I just don't get it. So you could analyze that. What's up with that? But what you had in the first base of Mikdash is the Gemara says in Vilna Gaon emphasizes this. Iskalya Avonim, they did some revealed averas. There's certain things that crept into the culture they decided to ignore, and they did that. Okay. Sinas Chinam, he says, is a deeper thing because lo iskalya avonim. It's inside. So the simple shot over here is that people would secretly plot. In other words, I would act like I'm your friend, but behind your back I would talk about you. So the Vilna Gaon says, that's true, but it was even worse than that. Because what happens, this is the Vilna Gaon's explanation. This Vilna Gaon, in the famous Vilna Gaon of the Agadata of Rami Bar Chama, famous Vilna Gaon, he says that the difference is that what you do if a person worships Avodah Zarah, this is what the Gemara really means. That's an Avera that's out there. And Sinas Chinam is an Avera that's in here. Something wrong with my heart. So says the Vilna Gaon, that you know why one base of Mikdash Soli was destroyed for 70 years? Because the Averas were out there, terrible Averas. Gilei Reish, Michastam, and Avodah Zarah. Terrible, terrible Averas, but it was out there. Whereas Sinas Chinam might be somehow technically a smaller Avera, but it's in here. And in here, how could you have a base of Mikdash, says the Vilna Gaon? How could you stand in front of Kodesh Baruch Hu and bring Korbanos? How could you set up a central headquarters in Yerushalayim, which stands for peace? If you're not good people, you have to be good people. The first thing is, before we even get into putting the tefillin on, you got to be good people. You have to have a good heart. Remember, we learned this in Pirkei Avos, lev tov, lev tov. You got to have a good heart. If you don't have a good heart, the onesh. So we're 930 something years. With the destruction of the base of Mikdash. So what in the world is God waiting for? We don't worship Avodah Zarah so much anymore. Even non-firm Jews don't worship Avodah Zarah. I guess it depends how you define Avodah Zarah. But they're not worshiping Avodah Zarah so much.
Shekels.
Except for wearing shekels, right. You know, I spoke in Hong Kong a couple of years ago, so I like, you ever go to Hong Kong? Anybody go to Hong Kong?
No.
So very cool. Hong Kong, like, was a big metropolis. It looks like Manhattan or Chicago or LA or something. But in the middle, like every couple of blocks, is huge statues.
Wow.
You know, like big statues, ugly, monstrous looking statues, multicolored. They're all over the place. So the guy who picked me up in the airport, big businessman, I said to him, is this like the Chinese Avodah Zarah? Is this like the Avodah Zarah of the place? I couldn't figure out what these statues are all about. So he points to one of the skyscrapers of Hong Kong. He says, that's the Chinese Avodah Zarah.
Wow.
He says, it's not these statues. Those buildings are. Okay, so it depends how you, depends how you define Avodah Zarah. You know, like Avodah Zarah, like, skyscrapers and money and banks and brokers. I mean, that's also the shtickle Avodah Zarah. But basically, we're out of that deal. But so what's God waiting for to build the base of business? The answer is waiting for good people. He's waiting for good people. He's waiting for people that have a lave toe. So as long as we're sitting here and we're in the second temple syndrome, where we're criticizing other people and where nobody's good enough and everybody's got it wrong but me, until I get out of that, there's not going to be a second temple, period. There's not going to be, because there's no material to work with here. It's a tremendous building gone. But it just immediately relates to what we're saying, I think. It just occurred to me, the comparison right here. But it's exactly like this Marsha, because what the Marsha is saying is that the pshat in the Gemara is here huri aver, kashim aver, that it's worse. The thoughts that go into an aver are worse. It means what's inside is worse than what's outside, says the Vilna Gaon. And there you have your two temples. What's inside is much worse than what's outside. It's taken a long time to get over this thing. And I don't even know if this is part, but just while I'm pontificating here, I don't even know if that's part of the program. Like, everybody is really working hard on the outside stuff, which is good. No problem with that. But is there a lot of work being done at the inside stuff? So if you look at the real Gedolim throughout history, they said, emphasize, what did Rabbi Shmuel Salanter say? Let's make a Busser movement. What did the Chafetz Chaim say? Let's get rid of some of this lev ra. Like, the real Gedolim, the Chafetz Chaim wrote a Mishnah Berurah. He was very worried about the technicalities of halacha. But he also wrote a Chafetz Chaim, and he also wrote 100 Svarim, which are explaining, what did the Baal Shem Tov want in the world? It's good, we've got to do all these chumras and halachas, and that's all outside stuff. We've got to do some inside stuff, too. So the Baal Shem Tov started an inside movement. What did the Baal HaTanya want in the world? He wrote a Shulchan Aruch, Rav Shulchan Aruch, very, very important. But he also wrote a Tanya. You got to do some inside. All the Gedolim of the world, whatever branch you want, the Vilna Gaon, the Baal HaTanya, the Baal Shem Tov, the Rav Nachman Breslover, the Chafetz Chaim, Rabbi Shmuel Salanter, take it from anywhere. Look what the Gedolim emphasized, and it wasn't the minutiae. Although everybody says that's important because you got to do the right thing, you got to do the right thing. You got to be a high tech person when it comes to halacha. But don't forget, don't let that take the place of what's going on inside. It's such an extremely important thing. And I always find, just if I could be a little bit critical, falling into the second temple syndrome myself here, but I always find that it's the not the first or the second echelon of gedolim that make all these big tumults about, that we're not keeping the air properly around. It's always like the third and fourth rank down that's doing this stuff. Where the big gedolim are busy with our midos and our kavan and davening and our relationships and some achdus. You can't lose sight of that, because that's what the Vilna Gaon says. That was the chorban. Please don't misunderstand me that I'm under. Estimating or under, I don't want to take away the importance from what's good. What's good is good. What's good is that we're involved in the dikdukim of halacha. But what's not good is that there's another side, and that's the inside stuff that also has to get all fixed up in order for everything to work out and there finally to be a basic condition. And that's the essence of tshuva, to turn around the inside. So we didn't get to saying the Rambam inside again, but you remember from yesterday or maybe tomorrow. Tomorrow's the day, right? So, we'll go through it. I'll show you this inside, but this the concept is extremely important. Okay, let's talk.
It doesn't even in the beam. It doesn't also talk about that Hashem doesn't want the carbonos as much as he wants him to treat your fellow well.
Perfect. Yeshayahu said it, right? Lovely rives yivchechem amar Hashem. So what does it mean? Doesn't want our carbonos? Of course he wants our carbonos, but why are you davening, right? V'libam balimam, and your heart's not in it, right? So. So you need both.
Wasn't it also a first temple problem and not just a second temple problem?
Yeah, but kavana. So kavana, what I think what he meant over there was, I think what Yeshayahu meant was that they were doing the actions of from Jews, bringing karbanas, but they were also worshiping Avodah Zarah. So obviously they were going doing it by rote, right? But they weren't doing it with kavana. So that's not yet.
Not treating people.
No, yeah, more than that. It's not yet an inside problem, right? It's not like there's a mum inside. It's that you're just a faker, right? You're a hypocrite. You're a faker. That's like a little bit different. Yeah?
I was going to say, basically, I don't know if anybody answered your question or not. One thing that I mentioned to us earlier was last year was that it wasn't so much that. I mean, there was also this kind of, there was also like human skin on, to a certain extent, in the first temple, but Yeshayahu, I think Yirmiyahu would speak about it, talking about how people stab each other with the tongues or whatever.
Right.
And it's like, that was just like the other people. Like, it was like a few,
like, hey, shot with Lashonim, yeah.
It's like, you have your politicians, whatever. But everyone else, there was obviously Israel, even though there was Abu Zara.
It's an interesting point. It's true.
I don't understand the script. I was obviously
love you. I just gotta kill you. Okay. If I told you, I'll have to kill you. Okay, sure. Thanks.